Welcome to the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange. Today's topic is Understanding the WAS Service with the WAS Service Command Tool in WebSphere Application Server. Today's presenters are Randall Anders, Elaine Delfell, and Paul Van Norman. Randall has been employed by IBM since February 2000. Since that time, he has worked on many WebSphere application server products dating back to version 3.5. Randall has had a positive impact on many teams during his tenure at IBM, such as systems verification tests, development, beta education, and currently WebSphere application server Level 2 support. Elaine joined the WebSphere team in 2003 and works in Level 2 customer support for the WAS ADM team. He is a senior member of the administration team responsible for assisting customers with debugging WebSphere problems. Paul has been team lead for various WebSphere application server support teams since 2007. At this time, I would like to turn the presentation over to Randall, Elaine, and Paul.
Hello, everyone. This is Alain Del Valle. I would like to thank all of you for attending today's WSC presentation for the WAS Service Command and the WAS Service CMD utility. Before we begin today's agenda, I would like to say two terms here that we're basically going to use throughout the whole entire presentation, and we don't want anyone to get confused. So we have the WAS Service Command, which is the one that comes with WebSphere, the product itself. Then we have the WAS Service CMD, which is a utility that helps build the commands for the WAS Service utility. Next page, page two. In today's agenda, what we will cover is the WAS Service Command, what is the WAS Service CMD utility, the required permissions needed in order to run these WAS services. Then I'll go over all the required and optional parameters for the WAS Service Command. Then we'll go ahead and discuss what are the benefits of the WAS Service CMD utility. And finally, we'll go over some examples, problem determination, and common problems we see with the WAS Service component. Joseph, next page, page three. Okay, first of all, we'll start with the WAS Service Command. Basically, the WAS Service Command is an .exe file that lives in the WebSphere App Server bin directory. With this .exe file, you can go ahead and create your Windows services to start and stop WebSphere. You can also check the status of your servers by invoking the WAS Service Command also. The command accepts many different parameters, a total of 17 parameters, which I'll discuss later slides. Page four. Okay, some of the parameters are required. Without them, the service will not run properly, and these we will go ahead and discuss in a later slide also. In the bottom of the slide, you can see the creation of a WAS service basically requires a lot of parameters to be entered manually. If by any chance you misspell any of these parameters or you put a path incorrectly, the service will not work properly. It won't start or stop according to what parameter got messed up. All right, let's move on to page five. By the operating system, there's a couple parameters which are required in order for any of the Windows services to actually work properly. One of the main parameters is you must be a member of the administrators group. If you're not a member of the administrators group, you will get errors and the service will not start. Then there's two other parameters which are in your local security policy for the operating system itself. The first one is act as part of the operating system, and the second one is log on as a service. The user needs to have both of these parameters for everything to work correctly. Let's go on to page six. Now, there's another type of way that you can do this. If you want to run your service as a domain user, the same parameters are basically required. You're going to need, at a minimum, to be an administrative an administrator, act as part of the operating system, and log on as a service. All of these parameters need to be set on the actual local machine. If the service by any chance is running on a domain controller, which is not a very common thing, the member may be needed to have domain administrative group privileges in the domain controller itself. And it will also need to have act as part of the operating system on the domain controller. Let's go ahead and move on to page 7. Okay, the following parameters in this page are required in order to create a service. One of the main parameters is the profile path. What you want to do here is you want to, for profile path, you would want to have something like WebSphere, App Server, Profile, My Profile Name. Some common problems we've seen in the past is people may do them all the way to WebSphere, App Server, Profiles. The next parameter that you want to, that's required is the server name. This one's very important because this is the server that the actual Windows service is going to be controlling. For example, let's say you have a default install and you only have server 1. The server name you would put in there would be server 1, and basically the Windows services will start and stop server 1 for you. Let's go ahead and move on to page 8. The following are 15 optional parameters that are needed in order to, if you want to do a customized service. Basically, if you do not pass a parameter, it usually defaults to something that's already preset. Let's go with the first optional parameter, which is the dash add. So dash add is your main parameter to create a service. So basically, you do WAS service, dash add, and then the service name. The service name you put there is what's going to be getting displayed in your Windows Services panel. The next parameter that's optional is the dash config root. This parameter is here in case you don't have a default install and your directories are in different locations. So if you specify dash config root, you can tell the Windows Services where your config directory is. Basically, your config directory will be WebSphere App Server Profiles, profile name, slash config. The next parameter is dash encode params. This parameter is used to encode the start arguments or the stop arguments in your Windows registry. So basically, if you don't put this parameter and you pass the dash username, dash password in your stop parameters to stop WebSphere, your parameters will be in plain text in your Windows registry. If you pass the dash encode parameters, it'll encode the parameters for you and they'll no longer be visible. There's a little example of how you run that command in the screen there. The next parameter is dash log file. The dash log file parameter is used to create the log for the Windows service itself. Basically, what goes into this is when the Windows service is starting, it'll basically put starting, open for e-business, just the regular output that comes out from the command line. The next parameter we have is dash log root. This is a very important parameter. So basically, this parameter is used to give your root directory. Inside your root directory, the process ID. Whenever you start WebSphere, you'll get a PID, which is a process ID, and basically that means that the server is started. You'll get open for e-business, and you got your process ID there. If you're going to run another command that we'll talk about a little bit later, which is dash status, basically what it does in the background, it looks for the PID file in the log root directory, and if there's a PID living in that directory, it'll say the server started. If there's no PID, it'll say stopped. Joseph, let's go ahead to page 9. Okay, the next parameter is the dash remove parameter. This parameter is used to remove any service you no longer need. So you do WAS service, dash remove, and the service name. The next parameter we have is dash restart. There are two different types of outputs you can put for this parameter. True or false. If you set it to true on dash restart, basically what happens is if you try to start your service and it fails, Windows automatically tries to restart the server for you. If you set it to false, basically you fail once and that's all you get. The next parameter we have here is dash start. The dash start parameter is used to start or stop a Windows service from command line, basically. So what you would do is you go to the WebSphere App Server bin directory, or you can go to WebSphere App Server profile name bin directory. And from there, you can run, from a DOS prompt, you can run WAS service dash start and then the service name. This will start up your service for you. The next parameter we have here is the dash start args. So this parameter is used in order, in case you have any JVM properties or if you want to enable tracing, whatever is required by your environment, you can go ahead and add it to the start args parameter. The next parameter we have here is dash start type. There's three different options you can use with the dash start type parameter: automatic, manual, or disabled. If you choose automatic, basically what start type does is if you restart your operating system, upon restart, Windows starts starting all your services. If it's set to automatic, it automatically starts it for you. If you have it set to manual, you basically have to go to the Windows Services panel and start and stop it manually from there. Or you can write a script to do this. And then the last parameter is disabled, which basically you can't do anything when it's disabled. This is one of the, whenever we're doing debugging on WebSphere, we tell most clients to go ahead and disable the service. That way we can just start it and bypass the Windows services altogether. Let's go ahead and move on to page 10. Okay, this is the last page on the optional parameters. The next one is dash status with the service name. This is the one I was talking about earlier. So if your log root directory is defined, basically dash status, when you call this one, it calls it goes to the log root directory and looks for a process ID. If there's a process ID living in that directory, it'll say that the service is started. If not, it'll say stopped. Moving on to the next parameter, dash stop. So dash stop is basically the same thing as start, only that it stops WebSphere. So you can go to command line and do WAS service, dash stop, and then your service name, and this will stop the service for you. Moving on to the next parameter, stop args. So stop args is same thing as start args. You can put JVM properties in there, or basically one of the main uses for stop args that we've seen in the past is basically if you set up security, WebSphere security, global security, you basically have to have a username and password added to that. So you'll pass a parameter dash stop args space dash username. You give your username space dash password, and you give your password there. Moving on to the dash user ID. This parameter is sometimes confused with the stop args with username, but dash user ID is basically, let's say your user lives in the domain controller itself. So what you want to do is you set the dash user ID when creating your Windows service, and this will set the logon as property for the Windows service for that domain user to be able to start and stop WebSphere. And, of course, you need to have the three privileges that I discussed earlier. The last parameter we have is dash WAS home. This parameter is used to tell WebSphere, to tell the Windows service where your WebSphere install is located. So basically, it's WebSphere App Server by default. What I'll do now is I'll go ahead and pass the presentation over to Paul Van Norman, my colleague, and he'll be discussing the WAS service CMD utility, which is basically a helper utility for this command, the WAS service command.
Can you go to file 11, please? So what is the WAS service command? Actually, it's a utility that, as you can see, that the WAS service exe itself has a lot of parameters to know that the proper syntax of and what's required and what's not required. So it gets kind of complicated. What we came up with was the WAS service CMD, and this utility actually prompts the user in a menu format for the required parameters and some of the optional parameters. And as you can see, that some of the parameters are quite lengthy, very, very easy to make a spelling error or uppercase, lowercase, that type of thing. So that's again, that's what the WAS service command is. The next coil, 12, please. All right. So there's a number of benefits for using the WAS service command. What it does is, again, is it provides a user-friendly interface. It provides you a menu, and it allows you to select one of the menu items. Some are optional. Some are true-false type of things. And it, again, also helps you to reduce any possible spelling errors, for instance, some of the paths that we have to put in. And this can actually be used by other products, too, any other stack products, such as Portal, Maximo, the Process Server, those other products. Page 13. Other benefits, it actually detects the paths that are automatically. So you, first of all, you simply need to put this in your WAS root. From that point on, it kind of knows your environment. So it can see, it already knows the paths to your profiles and where the default log locations would be, that type of thing. And so it allows you to change it. It prompts you. A lot of times, in most cases, it gives you a default value. And there's a couple of cases where you actually have to type something in, such as your username and password, and perhaps even the name of the service that you're wanting. Other than that, most of the other prompts are provide you a default value. It also allows you to do some other things other than just add. It allows you to list the status of the services to see whether they're stopped or started. It also allows you to enable tracing. Next page, please, 14. All right. And so, again, it also allows you to remove services from the list. So you can very quickly, if there's a problem with a service, you can very quickly remove the service and recreate it again. An example of when you might want to do this is if you have changed your password for your WebSphere process. So if you change the password, in order to update the service, you'd actually kind of, one way to do that would be to remove the service and then go ahead and re-add it. And with the tool, very, very simple. The tool also logs every command that you issue. So you can actually go through the process of making your selections, the profiles, the servers, the passwords, all that type of thing, and not execute it. And this was actually logged in the WAS service command log file. And you can actually use that at a later time, or if you want to recreate it on a different system, you can just copy and paste that into your command line. So all of these commands, so this is are logged in the log file, and it's kind of easy to go back and take a look at the syntax and make sure you did it right or did it the way you expected. And it works on all versions of WebSphere that have profiles. So that would be 6.0, 6.1, and 7.0. And with the tracing, this can actually be used for your normal debugging. So you would enable the tracing and do your start and stop, and we'd be able to capture that in the logs, in the traces. Page 15. Okay, so what we're going to do is we're going to go through a number of examples. We're going to show you how to use the command line utility or the command utility to add. We'll go through the required and the optional parameters. Then we'll show you how to remove a service, how to check on the status, and how to enable the tracing. Page 16. Okay, so the next set of about 12 or so foils, what we're going to do is we're going to show you in the yellow square area. This is actually what you'd be seeing from the command line in Windows. So if you'd open up a command line and you run the WAS service command.exe, this is what you would see in the window. First thing you see is the menu options, and we have the first five menu items. One is to add a new or update a Windows service with the minimum required parameters. The next one is to add new or update an existing service using all of the available parameters. The next, number three, would be to remove an existing WebSphere service. Number four is to check the status on the Windows service. And number five is to enable tracing. At the bottom of each one of these screens, and just so you have something to watch out for, is you usually see the prompt line, which is cue to quit. So it just makes it a little bit easier for you to follow and see where the line is. Page 17, please. All right. So in this example, what we're doing is we're selecting number one. We select number one, and then we hit enter. What will happen is we will list, we'll go into your configuration, your profile registry, .xml, and we'll parse out and find all of the profiles that exist on your system, and then allow you to select which one of your profiles that you want to use to create the service. So in this case, we've just got three profiles, and the user has selected number one. After selecting that, you get a little bit of a feedback. You get the file location for your setup command line, and this kind of just shows you the status that we actually found it. We use that. We scan that because out of that setup command line, we're able to determine the cell name and the node name. Page 18, please. So the next menu item that pulls up is after you've selected your profile. In the last case, it was the deployment manager profile. It lists the services that it finds for that profile. In this case, there's only one, which is the deployment manager. We also give a hint, a little bit of a hint and a warning. And the hint is, again, you know, we see PMRs that get open, and sometimes people have, you know, problems with the server not starting properly or with unexpected results. So this hint here is just kind of to guide you along. And basically what it states is that in an ND environment, that you should really, in normal cases, be using a service for the node agent and the deployment manager servers. The other servers can be started by the node agent, and that's if you've entered up your you set up your monitoring policy for those servers. So in this case, we've selected number one, which is the only one that we can select. Page 19, please. All right. So in this screen, we're actually seeing two selections. So the first selection you can see again focus on the cue to quit. That is the command line. That's actually where the user puts in his information. So what you are is you're prompted for a service name, and you can pretty much add whatever you want. We give you an example of the format that which your usually uses. In this case, the user typed in 6.1 service as user, and you hit enter. And when you hit enter, the restart policy comes out. And there's two options here. Option one is automatic. Number two is manual. Again, at the prompt line, you can see number one is default. So in fact, if you just hit enter, it would take number one. But in this case, the user hit number two. Next foil, please. That's 20. All right, and so the next prompt that we see, again, this page has two on them. The first prompt is the start type, whether it's automatic or manual. And again, it has a default of one, and this user selected number two and hit enter. The next prompt was the security. Now, this is really, you're being prompted here to help you set up your stop args. Now, it's not really required, and it would work without it. But basically what it's doing is kind of stepping ahead a little bit and allowing and setting up your command line, your stop args with the username and password if you have security enabled. So in this case, the other thing is that the username and password should have or needs to have the admin role or operator role permissions in order to be able to stop WebSphere. And again, this is a WebSphere required role in order to be able to stop it. Okay, so here we're prompting, is security enabled? Default is no. If you go no, you just skip the other two prompts. In this case, the user has said yes. You are then prompted for a username. You are prompted again for a password, and the password is all starred out and hidden. So you're prompted a second time, and then those two are compared to make sure that you have entered it correctly twice. Page 21, please. After entering the security information, the next screen actually shows you what it's about to execute. And so underneath there, you're seeing the WAS service command -add, with the service name that you provided, the server name that you provided, along with the path and stop args. And you can see that there's double quotes around the dash username and password. So, again, these are some of the things that a user, especially for the first time, they're trying to create one without this tool, they can run into problems if you're not quoting it properly. And, again, start type and restart equals false. And so here we are, is to the command asks you, the prompt asks you if you want to run the command now, and default is yes. You could just push enter. After doing that, you will get the message from actually the wasservice.exe. That's when we've executed it. That tool's taken over, and it's giving you a little bit of feedback. It's giving you the service name that you provided and some of the paths that we found automatically that you did not have to type in. Very last line, we can see the full name of the service, and it was created successfully. And just so you know, within the Windows Services panel, you will see the full name of IBM WebSphere App Server version 6.1 dash the service name you provided. And this is kind of important because if you go ahead and try and delete that service using the command manually and you type in that full string, it will not work. So, again, it's a little bit of confusion and, again, may end up resulting in a PMR being opened. So, in the lower section that's white, you can see that this is a result. This is a bit of a screenshot from the Windows Services panel showing that the new service was created and it's using the ID to launch it as the local system. Page 22, please. All right, so now what we're doing is we're going right back to the main menu where there's the selection of five, and here what we're going to do is we're going to select number two. And this one actually has all the possible parameters that can be used. So instead of going through all of the ones that we did in the previous one, we're just kind of continuing on with the ones that we did not cover. And again, in this screenshot, we're saying that there's really two prompts. And so the first prompt are the start arguments. And this one you can just enter on the command line of whatever you want, add there. The second one is the log root path. Now, by default, it uses the location that you can see under logs DMGR. And you could hit enter, and it would accept that. Or in some cases, some companies like to use their own. They have it all in a different location. So you can hit the fully qualified log root path. And again, use an example. And next foil, 23, please. Now, the same thing happens with the log file. You can accept the default, which is giving you the extension of the ws_startdmgr.log. Gives you the full path there. You can hit enter to accept that. Or, again, if you have a different location that your company uses, you can type that in. You hit enter. The next prompt is the config root. Basically the same thing. It gives you a default that you can accept. You can kind of see the format, or you can type in your own. Foil 24, please. And, again, we come back in this section. We're kind of showing that we're going back to the security prompt. And here we say yes again. We provided the username and password. And the reason we're showing this is that in the first menu, we did not expose the stop args. That's just taken care of for you. You can see that on the command when it's about to be executed. But when we're showing the full one with all the options, you can also add additional stop argument parameters. So this message here basically tells you that we've already taken care of the stop args with the username and password. That's already been taken care of. But if you have additional ones, go ahead and enter it here. So that's all that piece does. Page 25, please. After me entering that information, you go to hit the next window, and that's the prompt to ask if you want to execute it. And what we see here, again, is the fully qualified command with all of the parameters that we just gathered from you, the full path, the proper formatting, the quotes in the right spot, all that type of thing. And this, again, goes into the WAS service command CMD log, if you want to use it at a later time. You can actually copy and paste that on the command line, and with the exception of changing the password, which is all stars, you of course need to know the password, you could actually run that on the command line and it'll work and it'll create you a service. So you can execute it now or execute it later or whatever you want to do. And in this case, we went ahead and did run it. Again, it showed you some of the configurations that this is now passed to the WAS service EXE that's shipped with WebSphere, and it runs it, shows you the output, and we can see the bottom where it added successfully. And again, it's being run as a local system ID. Next foil 26, please. Okay, so now we're back to the main menu, again with the five to select, to choose from. And here we're just going to select number 3. We're going to show you how to remove an existing service. So after selecting number 3, we actually go into the Windows registry and we list all of the services that we found. And here in this case, we found 4 services. We selected number 1. And after selecting number 1, it shows you that we again prompt you to say, do you want me to execute it now? If you don't, that's okay because it's in the WAS service command log file. But here we've went ahead and run it. We said a yes. And it shows that it successfully removed the service. You're then prompted to see whether you want to remove another one or not, yes or no. In the bottom screen, there's a little bit of a line. That's from the Windows screenshot from the Windows registry again. This kind of basically just shows you that the service was removed. Page 27, please. And back to the main menu. We've selected number 4, which is just pretty much just to show us what the status is of the service. And we're listing. We go into the Windows registry. We list all of the services that exist there. And here we selected number 1, which is the new one that we've created, and it just basically returns that the service has stopped. Prompts you again if you want to check the status of another service. Page 28. Again, back to the main menu. The last option of the 5 is enabling traces. You select enabling traces. It gives you a little bit of information here. It tells you the location of where the service is. The WAS service trace log will be, and it's always in the same spot. It's always in /root. It's just right there. Another thing to note is this was kind of a new feature, came along a little bit later, this tracing thing. And so it was introduced in 6.1.17, 6.02.29, and 7.0. So if you have those versions or later, you're good to go. Otherwise, probably the best thing to do would be just to upgrade to those levels or the latest and greatest, and then you'll have it. Okay, so you'll get that, and the next prompt it'll actually just show you that the current status of your setting. So in this case, the WebSphere trace is not currently enabled. If it was, the trace would show that it is. And then it prompts you, do you want to enable it? Again, the default is yes. If you could just hit enter, and it would enable it. And again, this is great for when you're sending WIP any issues to IBM support. If you need help debugging why the service is not starting, it'd be great to capture this in advance. You can kind of take a look at it. I think Randall will kind of go through some of the messages that you actually see in the trace log. And I think that's it. We can go to page 29.
Thank you, Paul. Slide 30, please, Joseph. So one thing we kind of want to retouch on as far as the logs that we've seen, you've heard us mention 3 logs up to this point, and we want to make sure that we're clear on what these logs are and that there's no issues here. The first one we want to look at is the WAS service CMD log, which is found in the WAS root bin directory. Again, this is the log that's going to have all of the WAS service commands that you've executed with the WAS service CMD tool. And there's a snapshot of that there in the screen there. And this is really used for, again, to kind of as an auditing feature so that you know exactly what's going on in the system. And this is good for if you do find a problem or something has happened, you can kind of go back to this log and check, well, what were all the commands run? You know, that's one instance from an audit perspective. The other one is if you're doing this on one system and you need to replicate the same thing on another system, now you've got a script here that you could pull commands from, cut and paste, and run them on the command line or put them in a script itself, make whatever changes you need, and then run that, and that would, you know, that can act as an automation script that you have there for you. So that's what this log is for, the WAS service CMD log. Again, it holds all of the WAS service commands in it. Slide 31, please, Joseph. The next thing we want to look at, really, just kind of review and recap what we talked about with tracing. And there's really two ways to enable tracing. And we encourage everyone, you know, if you haven't used the WAS service CMD tool and you have a WAS service problem, this is one of the first things you want to do is to make sure that you enable tracing and you recreate the problem and then look at some of the things that I'm going to show you before you open a PMR and send this to us. This will help. There's two ways of doing this. You can do it automatically using the WAS service CMD tool, or you can do it manually. It doesn't really matter which one you want. If you don't have the tool already downloaded, then you can do it manually, or you can do it automatically. Slide 32, please, Joseph. So automatically, this is just the screenshot that we see there really is just showing what we saw a few slides ago when we selected menu option number 5, which is for enabling trace. And I apologize that the screenshot that you see is as dark as it is, but we've seen that screenshot before. It's just the information that you see there just shows that we've selected number 5 and the information that's there. What happens after you enable it automatically is you get a file that's created in the C drive that's called WAS service trace, and in that file there's the word trace that's there. I mean, that's just something that's the way the code is looking for it. It's hard-coded that way, but that's what happens when you do this automatically. And again, as a reminder, this feature to enable this tracing was introduced in version 602.29, 610.17, and version 7.0. Slide 33, please, Joseph. If you were doing the same thing manually, what you need to do then is to go to your C drive or to your root drive in Windows and just manually create this file called wasservicetrace.enabled. And you want to enter the word trace in it. And it's not case sensitive, so it doesn't matter the case that you use, but you want to make sure that that's there and save the file and recreate the problem. Because whenever the WAS service starts, it's going to look in this directory to make sure that this WAS service trace enabled file is there. And if it is, then it'll start to do the logging. And this is very important because it provides us really good information in helping resolve any PMR that may be or any issue that you may be seeing. Slide 34, please, Joseph. Okay, the next log that I think you heard us mention is the WAS service trace log. This only gets written to if you have tracing enabled, like we just talked about. You won't see this log file there if WAS tracing is not enabled. So if you've gone through and you've enabled it either automatically or manually, here's what you get. And so if you're having a problem, here's some of the things you want to kind of look for in this WAS service trace log. And again, it would be in the C colon on your root, C root drive there. What you want to look for is in the box, you can just do a search on start server executable. What this tells us is that if we see this in the logs, this lets us know that the WAS service.exe itself is okay, right? At this point, it's passed control over to the startserver.bat file, right? That's all the WAS service does. It goes through and it pulls different variables from the registry, and it has some piping and things that it needs to do, but then it passes control over to the startserver.bat file, right? Once you see this in the file, then if you were to open a PMR, it shouldn't be a WAS service PMR. There's a problem with actually starting the server using startserver.bat because WAS service.exe has done everything that it's going to do up to that point. Now, you see in that in the little box it says that the start server output is written to the third log that we've talked about in the presentation, which is this is what's provided when you pass dash log root and dash log file. This is the log that gets generated. It's WS underscore whatever the server is that you're starting, in this case, start dmgr.log. Now, if you're wondering what's written in that log, it's the same thing that you would get if you were running start manager or start server from the command line. Now, let's think about this in two ways. If you have a Windows service enabled and you go to the command line and you run start server, you normally see a message that says, this service or server is registered to run as a Windows service, and then it passes control back to WAS service to the Windows service, and then it tries to start it. That's what you see on the command line. If you had WAS service disabled, if you had the Windows service disabled, and you just went to the command line and ran start server or start manager, you wouldn't see that Windows services message. You would just see that the tool information is being logged to startserver.log, that it's starting the tool with whatever profile, in this case DMGR01, that it's reading the configuration and that the server is launched, and then the last message you see on the command line is that that server is open for e-business and you get the process ID. That's the only thing that's written in the WS start DMGR log. So if we were to ask for the logs, we would ask for this one too, just to find out if there's a PID in there or not. It's useful for you to send that to us as well. And you can look at this for debugging purposes to see if you have a PID there. Just to reiterate, the WAS service only writes to the WAS service trace log. So you can't go to WS start DMGR looking for any WAS service information. You're not going to see anything there. Slide 35, please, Joseph. When you're looking in the WAS service trace log, some of the things that you want to look at to tell you that everything has started okay, and if you don't see these things, that's what you would need to bring to the IBM Level 2 support's attention. Some of the first things that you would see there is, remember I mentioned that the WAS service passes control to either start server or start DMGR. So if you see this start server, wait for single object, that's the WAS service making a notification that we're waiting for start server or start DMGR to pass control back to us to tell us that it's actually started. And then what you'll see when start server has started, once it's completed, you'll see WAS service main, start server returned. This lets us know that what you would have normally seen on a command line is that it's now open for e-business. Right, that's the equivalent there for that message. Then what WAS service does is we do kind of a verification. We want to make sure that if it actually returned, that there's a PID there. So what WAS service does, you'll see these lines in the log file where it looks for the PID, it waits for the PID, it tries to open it, and once it opens the PID, it checks to make sure that you've got a PID there, 2860. So a good check would be to, if you were looking at this and you were having a problem, to see if you had a PID in WAS service trace.log, see if it matches the PID that's in the WS underscore DMGR log that we just looked at. You want to compare the two to make sure those PIDs match, because that's what would happen in the WAS service trace log. So these are some things that you want to look for in the WAS service trace log if you're having a problem starting the WAS service or starting it from the command line. These are some things that you want to look for. Slide 36, please. Some other common problems that I just want to reiterate that we've already talked about. One misspelled path will absolutely cause a service to fail. And this leads to wasted time by debugging by our clients, and it usually results in the generation of PMRs that probably could have been avoided if we used the WAS service CMD tool. And when adding new parameters to an existing service, the service needs to be recreated, and what it happens is it will append whatever your extra parameters are. It will append it to the parameters that you've already provided. So the example I think that was used is that, you know, if you need to change the username and password when security is enabled, you would just go through option 2 again and just provide all the parameters again, and just it would only update the one that's actually needed there. So it essentially recreates the service for you. Slide 37, please, Joseph. So the options that Paul mentioned before were all cases where the user ID that was used to log on for the service was the local system. We have a lot of cases where the clients want to use domain users in order to log on to the service. In that instance, Align talked about a couple of parameters or permissions that we talked about before, and we're going to see a couple of charts reviewing what those permissions are. But you can use the tool to create the logon as service for your domain user. There's kind of a trick to it, and we'll kind of walk through what that is, but here's what you really need to do. You run the WAS Service CMD tool and select option 2 for all the parameters. Take all of the prompts, but don't execute the command. What you want to do is cut and paste the command into a notepad, and then you want to go and you want to add dash user ID and dash password. And if you look in the blue box, in the yellow box here, this is the point where if you've gone through all the parameters and it asks you, do you want to execute this command now? What I did here is I just cut and paste this, and then I went under encode params, I added dash user ID. Now, I want you to notice this for the domain user. Look at the syntax for how the domain user is specified. It says in capital letters, domain slash username. In my case, my domain name is Austin, and it's in capital letters. That is case sensitive. That needs to be exactly the way the domain is specified in your domain. So that's the way I specified my user ID. Again, and the password there, it will be start out because dash encode params has been supplied there. So if you cut and paste that, now, and also let me kind of call out a difference here between dash user ID and then under stop args dash username. It's kind of easy to get those two messed up. And we get a lot of PMRs where the client used dash user ID for both of these, or they use dash username for both of them. And that's not the case. User ID is what you use to set the logon as. Dash username is what you use to use for stop args for stopping the WebSphere server. So that's a real big distinction there that can trip you up. So if you've cut and paste this and you run it on the command line, you can see the end result here in the bottom window where the service is added. And now in that red rectangle there, you'll see that the logon as user is now set to my domain name, which is Austin, and the username, Randall Test. That's very important. Next slide, slide 38, please, Joseph. And again, this is just to review what Align talked about earlier, because we do see this as a problem very often. If you're trying to start the service on a machine that's part of a domain and you're using a domain user, the domain user, and in parentheses, not the local user. We don't want to get it confused with the local user on the local machine, but the domain user must have these privileges, A, B, and C. Again, Align told us that it must be a member of the administrative group on the local machine, have the access part of the operating system, and log on as a service privilege all on the local machine. And I kind of added a little chart there, a matrix, to show you kind of what would happen if you don't have some of these things. If it's just a member of the domain with no privileges added, you won't be able to create a service. You won't be able to start the server. If it's just a member of the domain of the administrative group with no privileges added, you'll be able to create the service, but you won't be able to start the server, and so forth. And you can test this by just adding one permission at a time, and you won't be able to do both of them until you have A, B, and C added. And once that's there, you'll be able to create the service. And this is actually a typo in the presentation where it says start server no. On the last line that's highlighted in green, it should be yes. That's the only time that you would be able to create the service and start the server. Now, these permissions that are added would probably be granted by the domain admin. That's probably going to be the person in your environment that has the permissions or the privileges to grant these permissions for a particular domain user. I wouldn't expect the domain user to have those privileges. It would probably be the domain admin. Slide 39, please, Joseph. Again, in this chart, sometimes, we don't see this often, but there are times where you have a problem and you can't start the service on the actual domain controller using a domain user. If that's the case, if you have a domain user and you have a service on the domain controller, then there's a few extra things that you need to have as well. You still need to have the permissions that we saw before, right? And you need to have this as well. This kind of summarizes all of the permissions that we need. You need to be a member of the domain administrative group on the domain controller. And the distinction here, you'll see by color, the things that are in blue are on the domain controller and the things that are in green are on the local machine. So in A, you must be a member of the domain administrative group on the domain controller, and in B, have the act as part of the operating system in the domain security policy on the domain controller. I put this in red for domain security policy because there's two policies there. There's a domain controller security policy, and there's a domain security policy. And in this instance, it needs to be the domain security policy. We've had issues where clients have added it in the domain controller security policy, and it's failed, and that's not the place where you want to add it. It needs to be the domain security policy on the domain controller. And then in C, have the act as part of the operating system privilege on the local security policy on the local machine and the logon as a service privilege on the local machine. Now, I know that seems like it's a little confusing, and this is one of the reasons why we've added this in the presentation, and this information itself will be added as a tech note. We've got some tech notes that are out there already, and we'll get them updated with this matrix that kind of explains what the permissions are and what combination of privileges you need to have in order to successfully create the service and start the server. And again, as a note, you need to make sure that you edit the domain security policy, not the domain controller security policy. Slide 40, please, Joseph. Kind of some other scenarios that we normally see here we wanted to go through. If your client has a Maximo server and it's been running as a service for a year, and now all of a sudden we enable security via the admin console, then these two stop arguments need to be added to the existing service, which is what we talked about before, dash username and dash password. So this is an instance where you would go through using the tool to create the service again and pass these stop args as parameters. Slide 41, please, Joseph. I think we've mentioned this one as well. You know, if you're using WAS service, or if you're using WAS Service CMD, either way, and you're not taking the defaults that we provide, you need to make sure that you specify the correct profile path, and it needs to be all the way down to the actual profile name itself. Now, if you specify just to profiles, you're going to have a problem there, which is why when we run the tool, we give you a suggestion for the default. If you were to just take the default, everything would run without any problems. So my suggestion is that when you're running through the tool, if you don't want to use the default, to use it as an example to make sure that you specify the profile name for the profile path. If not, that's going to cause a problem creating the service. Slide 42, please, Joseph. The other one, I think Paul just mentioned this, just to recap, is if you're trying to remove the service and you use the actual service name, it's not going to work using WAS service. Again, we showed you, if you look in the Windows Services panel, the actual or the service name that you see there is this full name here, IBM, WAS, whatever version you're on, service, and then the actual service name. If you try to specify that or provide that as a parameter with the dash remove command, it's not going to work. The correct way to do that would be WAS service dash remove and then just the service name itself and leave off the prefixed IBM WAS version portion. Slide 43, please. You should really ask the following questions if you've created the WAS service successfully using the WAS service CMD tool and you're experiencing problems starting the service. You know, the first thing you want to ask yourself is the service defined in Windows Services? Really simple. You may run the tool, or if you're using WAS Service, or if you're using WAS Service CMD, you may think that it's run successfully. Just go to the Windows Services panel and check, do you see it there? That's one of the first things you want to do. Another thing you could do is go check the registry. the things like profile path and config root and some of the other parameters that we've talked about, we derive for you, but if you're not sure that these things were done correctly or that you think there may be a mistake, here's the registry entry that you can go check and actually check those parameters and make sure that they're correct. Does data exist in the standard logs, the logs that we've talked about? Do you see, is it being written to at all? Are you seeing anything there? Does the WAS service trace log show start server or stop server invoked? And for every action that you take with the service, if it's generating the status, if it's starting it, stopping it, removing it, you should see an entry in WAS service trace log. So we want to go back here again and look at some of the things that we talked about in the WAS service trace and see if we're seeing that these things are being invoked. If not, you know, that could indicate where the problem would be. Is the PID file current, and is that PID shown running in the task manager? We showed you how to check the PID file and how WAS service checks the PID file in the WS underscore DMGR start log. Check that PID with what you actually see running in the task manager. If the two don't match, there's a problem there. If your system is part of the domain, if it is, do you have the correct privileges assigned? I can't tell you the number of PMRs we get where this is the issue with the domain user, and it's an issue of the correct privileges have not been assigned to that domain user. So you want to check that as well. Slide 44, please, Joseph. Now, you may be asking, all of this sounds cool. Well, how do I go about getting the utility? Where do we actually get the utility from? Well, there's a number of places where you can get it, and this just lists a few references here. Each one of these places, the first one I listed first because this is the Info Center in version 7, and it should be in version 6.1 Info Center as well. If you look for WAS service in the Info Center, it will link you to this particular tech note, the one that's in the second bullet. It says, review the tech note entitled using the WAS service CMD to create Windows services. Here's where you can actually download the WAS service CMD utility. You go to this tech note, there's a zip file there that you can download, and there's actually a viewlet, a little demonstration that shows you how to unzip it and how to run it, and it goes over some of the things we've talked about. There's another DeveloperWorks article on the third bullet that's called The Support Authority Takes Confusion and Errors Out of Creating Windows Services that goes into a little more detail, explaining in a lot of detail some of the things that we've talked about today, and show screenshots for each step of the way moving down. And then the last one is a troubleshooting guide, which covers some of the things that I've talked about in today's presentation. If you're having problems with the Windows services, what you can do to possibly solve the problem yourself before opening a PMR. Slide 45, please, Joseph. And as a summary, what we wanted to convey to you today was that the wasservice.exe command itself requires quite a few parameters, and entering these parameters manually is very error-prone, and it always causes problems, and it causes PMRs, which caused us, was the main reason why we decided to see if we can reduce some of these PMRs and help the clients out, and that's why we came up with the wasservice CMD, because it reduces the opportunity for human error there. And allows you to pass in security credentials, allows you to enable and disable tracing, and all the commands or logs which we've talked about, which you can be executed at a later time. And we talked today about the required privileges for domain users that are there. Slide 46, please, Joseph. This chart includes links to a number of sites that provide valuable online resources for WebSphere products. Visit the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange site to learn more about upcoming WebSphere Support Technical Exchange webcasts, like the one you attended today, and access previously recorded presentations. DeveloperWorks offers in-depth technical information. Visit WebSphereUserGroup.org for user group information and more product information. The IBM Education Assistant consists of self-help modules to get new users up the learning curve quickly. The Service Request tool is for Passport Advantage clients to open, update, and view PMRs online. and the My Notifications link on all product support pages lets you sign up for weekly email updates for products of interest to you.
Thanks again for your participation. At this point in time, Kathy, we would like to open the lines for questions.
Hey, we do have one question. Greg Schweiler of Mayo Foundation.
Yeah, I have. First, I want to thank you guys for an excellent presentation. I have one thing that I want to know about the service name. When you do an ad service name, it always sticks IBM, Webster Application Server version, whatever version it is, and then a dash. Is there any way to get rid of that other than the way that I've been doing it? Can it be removed from the command service?
Yeah, this is Paul. Actually, there's no way to do that. That's actually hard-coded in the WASService.exe tool itself. And that's actually governed by the version. So in the 6.0, it would have that executable will have hard-coded the 6.0 version in the name.
Right. Yeah, I kind of figured that. It's an awful lot of mouth output on the front of that small window. The only other thing that I wanted to ask, and you guys, I thought maybe I could do it with the status. It doesn't work. If you've got a person that starts or stops and starts a app server from the console, it doesn't reflect when you look at the service panel in Windows. Is there any way to make it continually update that service panel?
Hi there. This is Alain. Basically, we have a tech note out there that actually says that's a limitation. It's an OS-level thing that causes that to happen. So let's say you stop it from the admin console. It doesn't reflect correctly. There's a tech note out there on this, and it's actually a limitation of the operating system.
Okay. Well, thank you very much. And once again, thanks for a great presentation.
No problem. Thank you.
And there are no other questions at this time.
Thank you, Kathy. And now I see a question here in the web conference portion of this call from a gentleman named Anurag. And so I'm going to read his questions verbally over the phone, and hopefully our subject matter experts will be able to answer them. And the first question here is WAS Service only for Windows? And what is the use of WAS Service.sh in Unix environment? And how is it used with Unix?
This is Randall. The WAS service, just the WAS service utility, not utility, but the command that comes as a part of the product, it's used on Windows and Linux. Right? It's not used for AIX or Solaris, but it's used on Windows and Linux. And we have Info Center information that discusses how it can be run in Linux. The WAS service CMD, we only created it for Windows. We don't have the ability to run that yet on Linux. So this was just something that we wanted to get out there to address a complete target of problems that we were seeing on Windows, so we only created it for Windows so far.
Thank you, Randall. And then I have a follow-up question here. And his second question is WAS Service Command Tool for Windows only, or can it be used for Unix?
So, yeah, currently it's just for Windows. We have not tested it on Linux yet, but I'm fairly sure it won't work on Linux. But maybe in the future we'll look into probably getting into Linux also.
Since we have no more questions in the Q&A, we will conclude the presentation at this time.